They told me that they thought that was, those were good ideas.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate General Government and Transportation Meeting. It's March 8, 2001. And at this time, I'm going to open a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 445. Patrick, tell us where we are with the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 445 allows a person to operate a Class 1 all-terrain vehicle on state highways when used for agricultural purposes, creates the offense of unlawful operation of Class 1 all-terrain vehicle used for agricultural purposes, and punishes a person who operates a Class 1 all-terrain vehicle in unlawful manner by a maximum fine of $75. There's a Dash 1 amendment that exempts Class 1 all-terrain vehicles operated as authorized in Senate Bill 445 from registration requirements, and there is a Dash 2 amendment that allows a person to operate a Class 1 all-terrain vehicle on state highways only when used for agricultural purposes and between ranches and fields. And secondly, it requires all Class 1 ATVs described under this section to be equipped with a headlight and a taillight, and requires ATVs to display a slow-moving vehicle emblem.
Okay, and who do we have signed up to testify on the bill?
Okay. State police here.
The first testifier is Ms. Jean Underhill-Wilkinson.
Jean, yes. Two of you, come on up. Come on up, Glenn.
Good afternoon. Chairman George, members of the committee, my name is Jean Underhill-Wilkinson, and I'm with the Oregon Farm Bureau. We've made several changes to this bill, as you can see, working with the Department of Transportation and with the Oregon State Police, and I think we've reached agreement on the changes that you have before you. And I appreciate all their participation, and everyone was flexible and willing to work with this. It sure provides more flexibility to the farming industry for transporting ATVs back and forth from field to field for farm use and ranching use. There was one issue. I think the intent, some folks wanted to make sure that when those ATVs are equipped with a headlight and a taillight, that that headlight and taillight are operating when the ATV is operating. And that was one outstanding issue. I had not noticed, and Sergeant Curtis pointed out to me, that the original language and the amendments say that the all-terrain vehicle must be equipped with a lighted headlight and taillight. So that I read that to mean that it's not only equipped, but it has to be operating with that headlight and taillight on. So for me, that resolves that issue. I hope for everyone else as well. So I appreciate your attention on this.
My name is Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. I concur with these amendments, and good bill should pass as amended.
Okay. Hey, that got your points.
Yes.
Any questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the amendments that a slow-moving vehicle emblem displayed. Is that going to be a problem to keep those on the machines? And are they the solid metal, or would they be pasted on the back of the machine, or how would that work?
Yeah.
Senator Meserle, members of the committee, I'm not sure. I suppose we would see the hard signs probably wired onto the back of some of those ATVs, baling wire, or hate string. But I assume the easiest thing would be if those emblems are available in a sticker form, then those would probably be the easiest thing to use and the most permanent.
Senator, for example, I have several ATV pulled agricultural implements. For example, a Nifty 50 spray rig. Okay, on the tank we have the SMV, and so we might want to ask the question whether that would qualify. It appears that it would have to be on the vehicle itself, so that would be something we would add The least expensive, of course, of those is the plastic one, which would be good because it has a little protective edge around it. It would not be a danger for someone to fall backward on. So I think that's, we're going to leave that up probably to the discretion of owners of ATVs. Any further questions? Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Patrick, can you sign that? Yes, there's one more testifier signed up, and it's Mr. Kurt Curtis from the Oregon State Police.
Welcome, Kurt. Good afternoon, Chair George, members of the committee. I just wanted to come forward representing the Oregon State Police. My name is Kurt Curtis, and I'm Sergeant with the Patrol Services Division. I just wanted to say thank you to the committee for listening to our concerns as expressed the last time that we got together on this bill. And working with the Farm Bureau and others that were involved, it was a great group to work with, and I think we resolved the issues that had come to face us at the last meeting. Thank you.
Great. Appreciate your help on this, by the way.
Any questions?
Sergeant, when you say that you've worked together and settled all common problems you have, does that mean that the vehicle can operate in such a manner that you don't feel as if unusual policing is needed for safety reasons?
Chair George, Senator Carter, some of the concerns that we had were vehicles that were operating maybe down in the borrow pit and then coming up with a single axle drive, losing control when they came out on the roadway. By the wording that was put in there with highway and then operation on the shoulder, this allows them to take the least resistance or be to the far right-hand side and operate that way. Additionally, it gives them the clearance or right-of-way to actually cross the roadway from field to field. That's one of the things that we discussed, with just having roadbed in the original bill. Basically gave no authorization to actually go up and cross the road. It just meant that you could operate in the roadbed area. Additionally, if they came across a bridge or something where there's no other place for them to operate with a slow-moving vehicle emblem and operating under that manner, they could go to the far right-hand portion of the roadway and cross that bridge. So it would be inconsistent with most slow-moving vehicles, such as we already have for golf carts and other items.
All right, Mr. Chairman, my concern was just that in the operation mode, we live in such a fast-paced society. Will they have enough lighting so that they are not injured by other vehicles that are moving so fast and don't seem to have time?
Chair George, Senator Carter, that was one of the reasons that we put the slow-moving vehicle emblem on the back as a reflective surface, to give people a chance that were coming up behind them not only to see the lighted taillight, but under inclement conditions to have that additional reflective surface that would show a slow-moving vehicle ahead.
Good. Thank you.
Any further questions? Not heard. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 445.
What's well, your vice chair, Zach?
Thank you.
I see you're moving quickly. Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 445.
Okay. Without objection?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 445.
Without objection? Fine.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 445 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Senate Bill 445 as amended will be is recommended to be sent to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further discussion on the bill? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That was an aye vote, by the way.
That was
I had three things going on here. With a one-person, one-issue farmer mind. Senate Bill 445 has been duly passed. Will be sent to the floor with a due pass, and I will carry that bill since I have a lot of experience with this, and it'll be great to know that I'm not violating the law any longer. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 445, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 753.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 753 establishes a short-line credit premium fund to provide loans to cover the costs associated with the credit premiums required by the Federal Railroad Administration for the securing of loans under the Railroad Rehabilitation and Improvement Financing Program. It authorizes the Oregon Department of Transportation to make loans to fund short-line railroads for the specified purposes, and it appropriates $2 million from the State General Fund to capitalize the short-line credit premium fund. The Transportation Equity Act for the 21st Century authorized FRA to establish the RRF program, and under RRF, FRA may provide direct loans and loan guarantees for terms up to 25 years for the acquisition, development, improvement, or rehabilitation of intermodal or rail equipment or facilities, including track, bridges, yards, buildings, and shops. Federal Credit Reform Act of 1990 governs the provision of federal credit assistance, and under FICRA, unreimbursed or subsidized costs of a federal credit instrument is assessed when the federal commitment is made to the project sponsor. The long-term cost to the federal government of a direct loan is a function of expected credit loss and interest rate subsidy. Long-term cost of a loan to the federal government is expressed in terms of a credit risk premium that the federal government requires to be paid upfront by project sponsors. Local short-line rail companies are unable to raise sufficient revenue to pay the upfront credit premium costs. There is a no revenue impact statement, and no fiscal impact statement has yet been issued, but I would estimate that it will be somewhere near $2 million.
So we will be referring this?
Yes, it will be a referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Okay. And you will be assigned to testify.
First testifier, Mr. Chair, is Walt Brickmadel with the Oregon Short Line Railroad Association.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair George, Vice Chairman Metzger, member of the committee. Today, I'm Walt Brickwedell. Today, I'm putting on my president of the Oregon Short Line Railroad Association hat. The Oregon Short Line Railroad Association strongly supports Senate Bill 753 and appreciates your efforts to assist Oregon's short lines in attracting new investment capital for infrastructure improvements. That's why the Oregon Short Line Railroads request now that you consider broadening the language of SB 753 to include other federal programs besides the Railroad Rehabilitation and Improvement Financing Program, thereby increasing the opportunity for the railroads to leverage alternate funding sources. The federal government sponsors other rail assistance programs that could benefit Oregon's small railroads, and it's possible the federal government may create new programs for short lines in the future. By broadening the language of SB 753 to include other federal programs, the short line railroads would be positioned to take advantage of both the current and future federal loan or grant programs that would require matching funds. For example, between 1978 and 1995, the federal government made available funds for railroad projects through the local rail freight assistance program. And under this program, loans or grants or a combination of both were used for the purpose of abandoned rail lines and for track rehabilitation. Originally, the program required an 80-20 match, and this was eventually changed to a 70-30 match. In 1995, the last year the program was funded, a little over $10 million was available nationwide. Of this, about $300,000 was distributed in Oregon for track rehabilitation on the Lake County Railroad, one of Oregon's short lines. However, following 1995, a new federal local rail freight assistance program was authorized, but it never received any appropriation. If this program does receive its funding in the future, the broadened language that we're requesting in SB 753 would help Oregon's short lines meet the local match that would be required to secure these federal funds. Another example was T21. This is another federal program which had provided an opportunity for a few Oregon railroads to receive federal assistance. Both the rehabilitation of the Coos Bay Rail Bridge and the slide removal on the Astoria line were designated high priority projects, and as such were approved to receive federal money with a 20% match. And Lake County Railroad has just prepared a request through their congressional delegation for consideration of another high priority project in the appropriation for next year's T21 program. Federal funds also have been used in Oregon for flood disaster repairs. on the Tillamook and Coos Bay lines, the latter belonging to the Central Oregon and Pacific Railroad. The Coos Bay line, the one I was directly involved in, received a grant of $307,000 in 1998 from the Federal Railroad Administration for repairs needed, necessitated by the heavy rainstorms between November 96 and March of 97. These storms caused over $500,000 in flood damage, so you'll see in some cases federal funds do not cover the railroad's entire cost. Therefore, an expanded 753 would give Oregon's short line railroads the flexibility needed to apply for funds from such non-traditional sources, also as the Department of Agriculture and FEMA for transportation projects. An expanded SB 753 also would increase the capability of Oregon's short lines to act quickly when other opportunities arise to apply for federal funds. Unlike many other states, including those far less dependent on the short line railroads than Oregon, our state does not fund rail infrastructure improvements. Last year, Washington State allocated $5.3 million from the General Fund for railroad track and bridge repairs, and Kansas routinely allocates $3 million each year from its Highway Trust Fund to pay for short line rehabilitation. Now, these are just two examples. An expanded SB 753 would add our state to the growing list of states that do support the preservation and improvements of light density rail lines, and especially those in rural areas that have been burdened by neglect. An expanded SB 753 would not only provide the credit risk premium fund for the FRA's RIF program, but it also could aid those seeking the matching funds required by T21, such as now being faced by the Port of Coos Bay for the rehabilitation of the rail bridge. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks a lot. Patrick, who do we have up next?
Mr. Chair, the next testifiers are Claudia Howes and Ed Emmel from the ODOT Rail Section.
Chair George, members of the committee, good afternoon.